Welcome back, everyone. This is DNFM. I'm Sam Solomon. DNFM features the latest stories in design and tech brought to you by Designer News. This is episode 6. My guest today has both written and co-authored dozens of books about the web. She speaks regularly about CSS grid and layout. She was a longtime member of the Web Standards Project. However, her background had nothing to do with design or engineering or the web. Her background was in dance and choreography, and as a matter of fact, if a PC World salesperson hadn't convinced her to buy a computer, she might never have gotten into web development. My guest today is Perch CMS founder Rachel Andrew. She's going to talk with us a bit about how she ended up in web development, how her studio transitioned into building products, and how frameworks are shaping the future of the web. We've got all that coming up and more, but first, the announcements. This episode of DNFM is sponsored by Peel. Peel is the original and best ultra-thin iPhone case. It's designed to keep the original look of your iPhone while still protecting it. Plus, it's branding free. So protect your new iPhone with the super thin case from Peel today. Head to buypeel.com and use offer code DN7 for 10% off your order. Again, that's DN as in Designer News and the number 7. And once again, we'd like to extend a big thank you to the team at Peel for sponsoring today's episode. All right, so what's new with Designer News this week? Last week, I mentioned that we've got a new date and badge filter for the site. Jody's also made some tweaks to story submissions. So if you do have any feedback, please reach out to Jody on Twitter at Jody Havener. Designer News meetups. We are going to be having a meetup in San Francisco coming up soon in later October. Previously, I said it was going to be October 13th. I lied. It's going to be actually on October 20th. We're still working out the details, but make sure to move that on your calendar. Obviously, we'll post any updates we have to the Designer News site. So we usually do an intermission for feature jobs, but since there's only a handful this week, figured we'd go ahead and do them instead of interrupting the interview with Rachel. So our feature jobs this week, Weebly is looking for a design manager in San Francisco, and Sprout Video is looking for a creative director in Brooklyn. So of course, if you're looking for a gig or you're looking to hire, make sure to visit designernews.co/jobs. There's a number of jobs posted there. All right, that's it. Let's get to the interview. My guest today is Rachel Andrew. You probably know her as a speaker, author, and of course the co-founder of Perch, which is a CMS built for web professionals. Rachel, it's great to have you on today.
It's great to be here.
So Rachel, let's talk a bit about your background. Many people listening know you're a web developer. Mm-hmm. You've written several books. You've given several talks. But I bet people don't know that you have a background in dance and choreography. Could you talk a bit about that? You know, did you end up thinking you'd be working in theater instead of web development?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the aim, was to work in theater. I mean, it has to be said that none of this existed when I was at school. I'm that old. So I actually learned to type on an electric typewriter, and there was one computer in my senior school, which is in the art room. So I predate this sort of the growth of computing, really, as something that someone might want to do anyway.
You've got a List Apart essay where you talk about purchasing your first computer. I think that's a pretty interesting story, so I'd like to read an excerpt and talk a bit about it. Mm-hmm. I might never have discovered this career had a PC World salesperson not upsold me to a computer on interest-free credit. It was 1996, and my aim was to get a word processor so I could take in typing work while I was pregnant and taking care of my baby. The computer enabled me to earn money by typing, while it also opened up for me this new world of the web. That excerpt is from It's the People They Know, which is a fantastic essay that Rachel wrote on List Apart. So it's funny how things work. At the time, that must have seemed like something that was an incredibly insignificant event, but yeah. I mean, it ended up changing the course of your career.
I have no idea what I would have ended up doing, because I you know, I'd gone from dance to backstage. I'd worked backstage when I got pregnant with my daughter, and I couldn't do that anymore because it's an incredibly unsociable sort of job. And, you know, obviously, I was about 5 months pregnant when I left working backstage. I was still lifting heavy stuff. But I couldn't have really gone back to that even once my daughter was born, because it's just a career for, it's a career for young people and a career for people without commitments. And it's a reasonably dangerous career. You know, I'd had an awful lot of accidents and injuries and things working backstage. It wasn't really something I wanted to do with a baby to look after.
So you purchased this computer. The plan was that you were going to start writing. But how did you end up writing about the web? I don't suspect that was the plan from the outset.
No, I mean, I knew nothing about the web. I mean, it really was. My father's a programmer, so I had had sort of some exposure to computers and things, but I saw it as something that I wasn't any good at because I wasn't really very good at maths. So it wasn't on my radar. I mean, I started playing around with the web just for sort of community. You know, I found all these other parents, and I was a young mother. I didn't know any other mums. I didn't know anybody else to ask my questions of. So I was asking people online, you know. And it was because it was early, it was so early on, there was nowhere to put your stuff. There was no Flickr and, you know, Facebook or anything like that. So we were all building websites. We were building websites to put our baby photos on so we could show each other the baby photos. So there were kind of these forums about, you know, like getting your baby to sleep through the night. And there were forums about basic HTML because we were all learning HTML because we all wanted to put stuff online. And that's really how it started. I was just trying to share stuff with other people who were mostly in America because that was, you know, where the sort of most of the forum were based. So that was it. That was all I was doing. I was just learning how to put things online.
So you're working on your own projects. You're putting baby pictures online. What about your first clients? Where did those projects come from?
I did a project for a charity, which actually doesn't exist anymore in the UK. And I think that was just kind of through a friend of a friend. You know, someone was like, oh, they need a website building. And, you know, I think I charged them barely anything. But what I charged them was enough to buy myself a CD burner afterwards, because I wanted a CD burner to be able to back up things off this terrible computer that I had. So that was about what I charged for this first website project, was enough money to buy a CD burner.
So after you finished this charity site and you've made enough to buy your CD burner, is that when you realize that, you know, maybe you can make a living from doing this stuff on the web?
I think when I sort of realized this skill was something that was in demand, and it was just from helping other people, you know, on sort of these forums and things, I realized I was actually quite good at it. You know, when I hit into problems, I could usually solve them, and I could solve other people's problems. And I was sort of just enjoyed doing it. Before I started doing anything I was paid for, I was already teaching myself Perl because I wanted to build a guest book, and Perl was how you built a guest book at the time. That was it. And it didn't really occur to me this was programming or anything that I'd seen as something I wouldn't be able to do because I wasn't very good at maths. I was just creating stuff. And it was whatever I needed to learn in order to build the next thing I wanted to build. I just sort of picked it up.
It sounds like it was just your curiosity that was driving you. That's a great position to be in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And it very much still is, to be honest. You know, it's like, oh, you know, look at this. You know, how does this work? How can I make this work?
It seems like everybody on Designer News is interested in React and Angular and all these JavaScript frameworks these days. But your work focuses basically on CSS topics, you know, layouts and grids. You've authored books on the subject. You know, what is it about CSS that excites you?
The layout stuff really comes from, I ended up using Dreamweaver a long, long time ago and just being interested in the way that it could visually show, you know, the thing you were building. That was kind of interesting to me. And that back in the day when we were doing sort of table-based layouts, that was the only way we stayed sane, really, because we could use Dreamweaver to deal with all those horrible nested tables and things. And so I did quite a lot of work there. And then when I was in the Web Standards Project, I was brought into the Web Standards Project in order to be part of the Dreamweaver Task Force. So we were working with Macromedia to try and encourage sort of standards in Dreamweaver. So I've always had this interest in layout and how we can represent layout and work with layouts. And so that's really where the whole interest in grids and things came from, is that sort of work.
Well, and that's interesting. How did you actually become part of the Web Standards Project? Was that something that you actively sought out?
I was very influenced, obviously, by what Zelman was doing and what the early Web Standards Project members were doing. I think from quite early on, I was seeing this issue of, you know, having to build websites twice for the two different browsers that we had at the time, right in the middle of the sort of browser wars era. And I could see that this was not great. And then I read, you know, things on a list apart and things that the Web Standards Project were putting out. And that very much influenced me and how I wanted to build things. When I was writing things, I was just writing stuff about standards and about using web standards in Dreamweaver as much as you could at the time. And I guess that writing then was sort of picked up. And so that was really where that came from. I've always written up the stuff that I've been doing. So I'll do something interesting. I'll think, oh, that might be useful to someone else, and I'll write it up. That's what I did really from day one, with the sort of forums I was on. And it's still what I do. You know, I do something interesting. I think that's going to be useful to someone. I'll write that up so that they can do it too. You know,
it seems like almost every project I know is now using some sort of CSS framework, either Foundation or Bootstrap, or some of the more minimal ones. But I'm curious, how do you perceive that these frameworks have changed web development in the last few years?
I don't think these sort of quite popular to say, oh, you know, I don't use frameworks and things. Well, we use frameworks. We use frameworks in the work we do. We've got to get things out there. We've got businesses to run, and the frameworks serve a very, very useful purpose, particularly when we're still dealing with CSS layout, which was never really designed for the kind of layouts we're trying to build. You know, floats were never designed for the kind of multiple column layouts that we want to put together. And so they're hard to deal with, especially responsively. And the frameworks serve a really useful purpose, is that they abstract away all of that. I mean, you can just worry about getting your layout looking good and not worry so much about, you know, calculating weird percentages in order to get the columns to line up.
Right.
So they serve a really, really useful purpose. And we use them, you know, in our work. And, you know, there's nothing wrong about using frameworks. It's just that the issue comes when people completely rely on that and don't look past the frameworks.
Rachel, why might that be a problem? If these CSS frameworks allow people to abstract a lot of things away and make it easier for more people to build, what are some of the issues with just knowing these frameworks?
What concerns me is that if people only ever work within a framework, they're not working with the core technologies, they're not working with CSS itself, and then they're not going to hit up against all the problems that we did in the early days that made us push for the core standards to get better. And that's really what I want, is I want the core standards to get better. I want us to have things, you know, like grid out there, so that we've got something better than using floats. And if we're abstracting everything away and just saying, oh, well, I'll just do what Foundation lets me do, that's quite limiting creatively, I think, but it's also stopping us from demanding better of our core standards, which I think, you know, we really want to solve the problem at the source. We want really great CSS for doing layout, so we don't actually need to rely on frameworks so much.
Wow, that's a really great answer. And honestly, I wasn't expecting it. The answer I was kind of expecting was something along the lines of, developers and designers and people building things on the web kind of better understand their technologies. But I think that is a really good argument that, you know, we should push for CSS to be as good, if not better, than some of these other frameworks for the purposes of layouts. So I think that's a really, really strong argument. I will say, though, I'm not sure that I see these frameworks going away anytime soon. And if they do, I feel like they might be replaced by something else. How can people go out? How can people get the word out? How can people push for better standards?
All right. Well, the CSS Working Group do put all the issues and so on are now on GitHub. Until very recently, if you wanted to see what the CSS Working Group were up to, you had to sign up for a mailing list, which kind of opened you up to this horrendous fire hose of stuff on every possible CSS specification. And nobody wants that. So people would sign up and then go, and unsubscribe again. That's not great. So now all the issues are on GitHub. So if you're interested, say, in grid layout, you can go and look on GitHub at the drafts and see which issues have been raised and what the working group want feedback about. So that's a sort of useful thing to do. I mean, the other thing is, you know, if you find bugs, to reduce them down and, you know, log them with the browser vendors. We could all do that. Most of the browser vendors now have an open way where you can actually log issues that you find. That's a really useful thing for everyone to be doing. So we actually make the sort of standards better and the implementations in browsers better. But also, we've got all sorts of interesting things like, you know, CSS shapes. There's things which aren't really implemented in many browsers, like exclusions and so on. If you like that stuff, write about it, because then the browser vendors see that there is interest from us as a development community, and they may be more likely to implement something if they're seeing, well, actually, web developers want this. They want this feature. So it's worth kind of writing about stuff, you know, just quick blog posts saying, oh, you know, this is really great, this thing that's in Firefox. Why don't we have it in Chrome? Because that shows that there's interest and makes it more likely stuff will get implemented.
Well, Rachel, I'd like to talk a little bit about Perch and then your experience moving from a studio into building products. So in 2001, you launched Edge of My Seat, which is a web development company. And in 2009, you guys launched the CMS product that I'm sure most of the listeners are aware of, called Perch. How did that start? What drove that decision?
It was really just something we needed. As a development company, we were doing fairly big content management system projects, the sort of thing that there wasn't anything out there which really suited. So we had a kind of framework we developed and we would do these big projects. And then we were mainly working doing that for design agencies, who would then say, oh, I've got this little thing. It doesn't really need anything that big. Have you got something to recommend? And we didn't really have anything to recommend. Not something that worked in the same way that was sort of template driven, allowed people to use their own markup and so on. So that was really where Perch came from, was just this idea that there should be a kind of drop-in solution for those little sites, where the sort of typical thing would be someone deploys a static site and then the client says, oh, I'd like to be able to edit the homepage myself. And then you're like, I don't want to have to rebuild this in WordPress, you know? So that was really where it came from, was solving that need. And it sort of grew from there, really, and moved from being this little content editor to actually being, you know, what's now a fully-fledged CMS, particularly with Perch Runway, the larger product. And we've got, you know, we've got a fully-featured e-commerce store and things as an add-on. So it's grown from those tiny roots, but it was just something we needed, and that's why we built it.
So how did you guys get to market? Was this something, did you guys have some extravagant marketing campaign? What was that launch day like?
I think we launched it on a weekend because we were like nervous. So we thought, what if we quietly launch it, then like if there's any real problems, because it wasn't just the software. It was also the first time we'd sold anything like that online. So we'd had to build, you know, all the delivery, selling and delivery. And it was pre Stripe and things that make doing that sort of stuff a lot easier. So we kind of snuck it out. We're like, oh, we'll just see how it goes. And actually, within, we had a sort of list of about 500 people on a mailing list. We'd stuck this campaign monitor sign up. And from that initial launch, within 24 hours, we'd kind of paid back everything we needed to spend to get the thing live, which was really surprising. I'm like, oh, maybe this will work, you know. But it really was just put it out there and see if people would be interested. We had no kind of intention at the start of that this would become all that we did. You know, it was just like, oh, it'd be nice if it made a little bit of extra money. But that was about as far as we'd thought about it. It was just interesting doing it and seeing, you know, a different thing as an agency to be doing than doing client work.
In this period after you launch Perch, but, you know, the revenues weren't sufficient to fund the business. What was that transition like, moving from a studio to a product company?
Really just that we treated Perch very much like a client. So as it was earning more money, as it was having more license sales, then we could devote more time to it, essentially. So And the amount of support with Perch is quite hefty. You know, people install it on their own servers. So in support, we get an awful lot of stuff, which is nothing to do with us. It's to do with terrible web hosting, or, you know, or people like, you know, their server not sending email or whatever, you know, things that really aren't anything to do with us, but fall into our lap. So there's always been quite a lot to do, you know, as we got more customers for Perch. So yeah, we just kind of assigned it more and more time. And it gets to a point when you're doing that where you don't have a lot of time for client work. And the sort of client work we were doing, it tended to be quite a lot of work. You know, there were bigger projects. So we kind of had to make that decision that, well, we need to really, you know, go and actually work full time on Perch as much as possible.
Oh, man, messing with servers is an entirely different beast outside of web development. So how did that affect your relationship with some of your old clients? Was there like any bad blood? Like what did they think when you basically said we're not going to take on any more projects?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of was one of those things because it happened over about 3 years. I mean, you know, you naturally come to the end of projects with clients. So, and there were things that hung around for quite a while. You know, that we said, oh, you know, we're not going to drop you. If you need things doing, we're still here, sort of thing. So there were things that hung around for quite a while after we decided we're not going to take on any new things. And, you know, even until very recently, you know, people would occasionally be contacting us and saying, oh, could you just help us out with this? And yeah, you know, fine. But yeah, we just weren't taking on the newer stuff. And it kind of coincided with the web changing quite a bit in terms of the sort of work people were wanting us to do anyway. I think we'd have probably changed our approach. We were doing a lot of the kind of thing where a design agency would throw a site over the fence for us to build, and then we'd throw it back finished. And that really doesn't work anymore as a way of working.
I've played that game, and I think there's still a lot of companies or a lot of agencies out there doing that type of thing. But I'm curious why you think that won't work anymore.
I think people need to work more closely. When we're talking about responsive sites, what was typically happening was a design agency would, you know, create everything as Photoshop documents. They'd have like a complete built site in Photoshop documents, which they would just chuck over to us and say, right, now build that so it looks exactly the same as a website. So we were like building this picture of a website and doing a lot of back end stuff as well. But we do a lot of the front end, usually all of the front end too. And that kind of, once you get into responsive design, and there's just too many decisions that need to be made as a team. So I think had we not ended up just doing Perch, we would have had to very much change the way that we took on jobs. And so we were kind of moving on from clients who only wanted to work in that way because we felt it wasn't a good way to work anymore. And that had been happening anyway because we were sort of like, we feel like we're going to deliver a substandard project if we can't work with the designer and have a bit of back and forth and make sure that everything works well. Yeah, so I think it was just the way when I set up the company, that kind of way of here's a bunch of Photoshop documents, make me a pixel perfect website. That was how people worked, but it sort of doesn't really work anymore.
You know, one of the things I've noticed is you've got traditional design or advertising agencies going out and pitching more web product or application work. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what do you think is driving that?
Oh, I think all sorts of things. I think your sort of basic build a brochure site type project, you know, a lot of clients are going to go and use something like Squarespace, or they're going to be, you know, using something more off the shelf, particularly the sort of person who just needs a first website. You know, I've set up a company, I need a website for my company. It's quite likely they're going to end up, if they're not just using Facebook, you know, to talk about what they're doing, they'll probably just go to something like Squarespace or whatever and set up something with a template, and they'll be perfectly happy with that. So I think that the jobs that decent-sized agencies are getting are probably going to be slightly more complicated than that. They're going to be where people need something more. Or they want, yeah, something that's much more like an application. They're wanting a load of functionality. They're wanting a lot of e-commerce stuff. I mean, we developed the e-commerce add-on for Perch because people were saying, this is the sort of project we're getting in. You know, if we're going to make reasonable money as an agency, we need to do e-commerce. And so we had to respond with a solution for that. So I think that generally the decent projects now are just more complex. They're bigger. Because the bottom end of the market, the sort of very simple things, are becoming a bit of a commodity, really.
I think you're exactly right. At the bottom end of the market, you're going to get Squarespace. You're going to get WordPress themes. They don't have a huge amount of functionality. You know, they're not going to be able to do one specific thing. But for people that are just looking for brochures, you know, they're cheap and they'll do. You know, since we're talking about how the web design industry's changed, I know you've written a ton about the industry. I'd like to talk about some of your essays.
Mm-hmm.
You've written about how stressful it is to work on open source projects and to write and to essentially donate your time and money. But on the other hand, you've also written about saying how much good fortune that donating your time and money has brought you. What's the right balance?
I think it's different at different points in your career. I mean, you know, I mentioned at the start, you know, I've always just done things and then thought, oh, that's interesting, and written it down for other people. And an awful lot of the good stuff that's happened to me has come because I've been willing to share the stuff that I know. But I think it's almost, you know, you hear this from people with open source projects. You know, they spend a huge amount of time putting this thing out there online, and, you know, they get it up onto GitHub, and then are faced with this kind of torrent of people just saying, you know, oh, this is terrible, it doesn't do this, and it's free, you know, it's
right.
Free. And I think it's really about people appreciating that and finding ways to support people who say, look, I can't do this for free anymore. I think that it is worrying as the industry ages that there are going to be people who've given a huge amount to the industry, you know, vast amounts. And we're already starting to see that. People who are, and then are getting into their 50s and 60s and perhaps have, you know, medical issues and they need help. And they're actually having to go back to the community and saying, look, you know, can you help me out here? Right? You know, because they've spent their entire life sort of giving to the community, but they haven't sort of also got the monetary stuff in response to be able to sort of have a future and be able to provide for themselves. And that concerns me because I'm getting older and I'm seeing my friends get older. And it's fine, you know, if you're 20 and you haven't got a lot of responsibilities to be sort of giving everything away. But we also need to make sure that people are encouraged to do things that they put a price on. And we don't make that a bad thing. We don't say, well, ooh, why should I pay for this? Because actually, I think we do need to be paying for things because we need to support people.
So it kind of sounds like that perhaps, you know, younger people or people without, you know, families and a mortgage, they're the ones who may benefit most from the good fortune by donating, you know, time and knowledge and contributing to open source projects.
Well, it's a great way to build up your career. So it's a good way for people to find out about you. You know, if you put out great blog posts or put out some open source software or contribute to a project, then all of those things will help you to build up profile. But at some point, you need to say, well, I also need to eat and I also need to pay into some savings. And so I think, you know, at some point, you realize as well that the kind of knowledge you've got or your abilities, you know, are worth people paying money for. And I think that's another thing. A lot of people don't realize that what they have is worth people paying money for. And so they're kind of like, oh, well, you know, I'll just keep on putting this stuff out. And so I think it's kind of on each of us to make sure that we not only share what we know and share things freely and help other people, but also are willing to look after ourselves and our families and make sure that we are actually sort of putting a price on what we do.
Rachel, I think that's about all the questions I have for you. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to sit here and talk with me about the industry.
Oh, it's been good fun. Thank you.
And that's going to be it for episode 6. If you're enjoying DNFM, you can subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud. Of course, you can always listen on the web at designernews.co/podcast. Just want to say you guys have been absolutely fantastic about providing feedback. You know, praise as well as criticism is always appreciated. We read every bit of it, and it really only makes this podcast better. You can also reach out to us on Twitter at @designernewsbot or to me at Samuel R. Solomon. And as always, if you'd like to support this show, please get in touch with us about opportunities. We would love to have you as a sponsor. Once again, my guest is Perch CMS founder Rachel Andrew. I'm Sam Solomon, and this is D. DNFM.